Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Stompcast with me, Dr. Alex George. This is the podcast where I go for a walk with a guest to take a little wander into their life. This week, I'm stomping with Joshua Fletcher, better known as Anxiety Josh. Josh is a psychotherapist who specialises in anxiety, which stem from his own experiences in figuring out effective ways to get himself out of panic attacks. He's amassed a huge following on social media, sharing his incredibly helpful insights and tools to navigate anxiety. As well as this, Josh is a best-selling author, and his new book, And How Does That Make You Feel? Everything You Never, Ever Wanted to Know About Therapy, is out now. As well as thinking about what happens inside a therapy room, we're also going to explore what anxiety actually is. Like, what is anxiety? If I was to ask you to write down what anxiety is right now, would you be able to do it? We're going to talk about when it's normal and also when it's not normal and that you might need help and what you can do. We're going to give you some top tips for navigating anxiety and panic attacks if you do experience them. I think this is going to be a really helpful conversation for everyone to hear. I hope you enjoy. Right then, welcome to the Stompcast. First of all, we're doing this a little bit different today because it really is raining. So usually I walk with my guest and behind us hovering just gently, I don't know why I say hovering, but just following us, I guess, but with permission, we have producer Charlie. But Charlie is now going to join me under my umbrella alongside. Charlie, how are you?
Good.
Well, you're in the conversation with us today, quite literally. And Josh, it's great to see you again. Of course, we filmed a YouTube video together before, and you came down to the old Dr. Alex HQ, as it were. And I really enjoyed your company. You're making fantastic content online, and you're known very fondly as Anxiety Josh. Obviously, with your background as a psychotherapist and your experience personally as well, kind of sharing advice, demystifying, debunking, but also now really educating through your literary work as well, because you are, of course, a published author. And you've come out into the rain with us, you saw the first hardback copy of your book, did you not? How does that feel? So we're getting a real life reaction of a few moments after. So what does it feel like?
It feels brilliant. Thank you for having me on. I'm still a bit shocked by it. It looks amazing. I was picking up and shining it under the light, you know, checking if it was if it was real. But yeah, what a lovely moment.
Smelling it as to smell that paper
and the book. I'm not smelt it yet.
Not smelt it yet. Yeah, no, I can't try and blag that into it. So the book And How Does That Make You Feel is kind of coming from your perspective, right, as someone who's a psychotherapist, but also someone who's experienced anxiety and things with mental health. And I mean, it's been likened to a little bit kind of an Adam Kay style of it. So you've brought kind of humour into it, which I think is very clever, because in mental health, a lot of the time it sounds very serious. And I mean, it can be, but, you know, sometimes debunking, demystifying is also trying to bring a bit of lightness to it as well. Why was that important for you writing this book?
I wanted to write a book that was available for everyone. I think when someone goes into a bookstore and they go to a certain section for a book about mental health, you know, some people may avoid that because of the subject matter. I wanted to write something that was accessible, that would make people laugh, and a book that was engaging and educating, but without you really knowing you're learning. Stealth help.
Stealth help, yeah. That's quite the word these days,
yeah,
isn't it?
They're my favourite books, favourite video games, favourite movies, where you know, you watch something, you learn a lot, but you did it whilst being engaged with what was happening. So I thought, I'm going to write a spicy memoir about what it's like to be an anxiety therapist, behind the scenes, what I'm talking about, some of the controversial stuff and some of the powerful stuff and why I love therapy. And I want, if someone picks it up and by the end of it, it's like, you know what, my perspective about therapy's changed a bit and I feel like it's less taboo, and I'm willing to just talk about it or bring it up in conversation, then I'd be a very happy man.
I love that. A spicy therapist. I think that's quite a way of like a 50 Shades of Grey kind of
thing. not quite.
Nothing like that. So can you share a bit of an example of one of the stories you talk about? I do think it's a fascinating viewpoint because, you know, just like, well, funny enough, this morning someone was like, Alex, you should really write a book about your experience of like being in A&E and the stuff you've seen. Because obviously we see all the way from like awful stuff to the funniest, most ridiculous stuff you can really imagine. And it's such an interesting, I guess, viewpoint. So, yeah, perhaps you could share a story from, yeah, that kind of side of things as being a therapist. Yeah, a little bit of the fun stuff, but also, yeah, the rewarding stories as well, because sometimes that inspires people and makes people feel a bit more comfortable about the topic, I guess.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, therapists are human, just like everyone else, and we have our vices and our flaws and our vulnerabilities. One of the stories from the book was when I was at my lowest, and I don't really give this context, you find it out, but, you know, it appears that my therapy is going well with my clients, and then it cuts back to a few years before where I'm on a night out in Manchester and I'm grieving but refuse to grieve and deny it. So I get my party head on, have a few beers and intake things I shouldn't be intaking, really, to the point with no control or restraint. And I end up at an after party of my own curation. And I'm so off my head that I've been having a conversation with someone for 2 hours, and I didn't realize that this used to be a former client who I, during my training years, because I was so dissociated and not well. And yeah, that chapter doesn't ends very interestingly, but that kind of highlights like kind of some of the dark side of therapy. But on the, well, of me as a therapist, but on the plus side, one of the most heartwarming things is when I was doubting myself as a therapist, and particularly in private practice as well, so you've got to rely on clients and advertise yourself and things. And I was in Lidl buying cheese and an array of beige food, and I just had no money. I didn't realize I had no money, and I was stood at the checkout. And you know what they're like in Lidl, you know, they're firing through the food.
Oh, yeah,
like,
they can give a Formula One mechanic a good run for their money, yeah, serious.
Yeah. I was on the brink of just kind of being really upset, and then someone comes along who was the sibling of one of my former clients, recognised me and says, yeah, you really helped my sister years back, you know, it's on me, don't worry about it, you know, and with this humility, and it brought a tear to my eye, and I'll always remember that moment. And yeah, those are the stories outside of the therapy room, and I'd share little bits about kind of what therapists get up to, not just behind the therapy door, but like, you know, what I'm doing outside, because I think a lot of people don't know, and it's a profession that's often shrouded in mystery. And I thought, well, I can share what I do, just to humanize it a bit.
Yeah. So I guess if we were going to go, right, look at an average day in your life, what does it look like? If you've got, you know, you're providing therapy for clients, but, all, you know, so looking at a day almost from morning to evening, not looking for perfection here, but what does it kind of look like? How do you look after yourself as a therapist, especially given the fact you sit in and hear obviously very personal, sometimes very difficult stories from your clients?
I think it's always, first of all, is kind of you look at your professional boundaries. I get asked this a lot, even by friends, like, how can you hear all that all day and then go home? It's like, I can, because I'm trained and it's left at the door. And don't get me wrong, I'm human and I'll take some home with me, but it's making sure that I'm looking after myself. I often use the gear analogy, which is like a lot of people go into work, including therapists, will often be in fifth gear, and it's seeing what works for you to go down to first gear. So for me, sometimes I'll go home, go to the gym. Sometimes I'm like, I can't bother going to the gym. I'll read, run a hot bath. I will do some kind of mindfulness or attention training. And sometimes I'll just sit in my boxers and play computer games. You know what? That's really nice. It's mindful. It's great for the brain. Yeah. You're opening up a different sphere, a kind of different part of your brain. Yeah, that's my self-care. That's what I do. I wouldn't expect anyone to replicate it. But, you know, I found what works for me. And I can feel myself going down in the gears. So, like, sometimes it'd be like, maybe I crave a bit of social time. So I'll ring a friend or a family member or offer to meet up with them and things like that. It's just keep picturing yourself. And you can feel when you're in fifth gear all the time because you can kind of feel like you're burnt out, irritable, tired, stuff like that. And if you're anxious, which is, I work with anxious people, it's, you often feel your nervous system on edge and you feel on edge and you're getting all these scary what-if thoughts and intrusive thoughts. Sometimes that's like a warning bell for slow down, go easy, go easy here. Maybe you've been pushing it too hard.
What is the most common kind of thing that you see in therapy? I mean, you look after, you know, anxiety is obviously one of the biggest things you talk about. What is the most common kind of presentation in the therapy room, if there is one?
So I work with an array of anxiety disorders. So I often work people with the fear of fear and the misinterpretation of fear. So these are people who have panic attacks, agoraphobia. That's the fear of leaving a safe space or a safe person just in case you feel overwhelmed. I work people with intrusive thoughts. So scary, taboo thoughts like harm or sexual thoughts or contamination. Very common, but you know, the kind of thoughts that you would be too afraid to say out loud. Always welcome in my therapy room. I work with people with health anxiety. Now I'm sure we've all Googled a headache once and then realized, oh, I could better start planning my funeral.
Yeah,
Google
yeah,
tells
sure.
me I've got, sure, I've got sure. a brain aneurysm.
Especially if you're a med student, it's part of the process of going through your... It's like first and second year of med student is basically every module that you do is a different topic and you think you have a disease that's the centre of the topic. And then by fifth year, you realise there's actually no point worrying about it all because you'd be dead by now anyway. And you just accept that actually it could be anything.
It was a cold that got you in the end.
Yeah, it's just like you start to realise there's actually no point. If I'm actually sick, I'll just go to a doctor rather than try and diagnose myself.
Exactly, yeah. So I work with health anxiety, social anxiety is a big one, with esteem. It's all different types of, where, basically when anxiety becomes excessive and we can't access our lives, that's the kind of client I work with. Obviously it comes with other things too, like depression or maybe and grief and various issues. But yeah, that's what I see, and the most common is probably panic. You know, people panicking, their nervous systems in overdrive when in situations where they feel like, oh, this isn't right. So you're in the supermarket and people feel like they're about to die or their heart's about to explode. And a lot of what I do in my therapy room is provide psychoeducation and assurances that you're actually all right. You're a bit more normal than you think.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I wonder how many people walk into the therapy room and question, like, am I normal? What is like normality? And I also wonder, you know, how many people come in and go like, Josh, have you seen this before? Have you ever seen anyone? Do you know what I mean? We're kind of like, because the cruelty in many ways, I always talk about this, is that mental illness is very clever at making people feel very alone and isolated. And even when you know that other people might suffer depression, for example, it tricks you into thinking it's just you that feels this way. Yeah. And makes you feel very, very isolated, which actually compounds the whole illness itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, depression, anxiety, it's very isolating. And you can sometimes feel some camaraderie with people, and it makes you feel less alone. But it's kind of paradoxical sometimes, because even though so many people, one in five people have an anxiety disorder, I don't know the stat on depression, but it's, you know, alarmingly high. And yet actually you can be sat in a room full of people like this and sometimes feel even more alone. And lots of people talk about it, and including yourself, when you've been so public about it, and I really admire that. But yeah, it's about realizing what you're experiencing is common. That's why I love psychoeducation. Psychoeducation's like, for me personally, I overcame an anxiety disorder when I knew what was happening in my body, made it less scary. You know, I wanted to know why I was having intrusive thoughts, I wanted to know why I've ended up in A&E three times with panic attacks. I wanted to know what was happening in my body because I felt like I was out of control. And a lot of what I like to do, whether it's social media or in this book, is just, hey, this is what's happening in your body. There we go. And I can finally, this is all that's happening. It's not as crazy as you think. And actually, you do have some power and control over it. Just not as immediate as you'd like.
Sure. And then that's a big part of it, isn't it, with mental health and dealing with things like panic disorder. It's like once you have the tools, once you know, then you actually become like a step, or you become closer to kind of dealing with it or feeling better from it. Perhaps, you know, you started there a little bit. I wonder if you could share with people, because we've talked about it before, and of course when you came on the YouTube, on my YouTube channel. Could you share a little bit about like why this has become so important to you? I mean, it's been your own experience and things with anxiety, but perhaps you could just give a little bit of a timeline to that and like how it's led you into, well, writing this book and being here today, really.
Yeah, I set out to be the therapist that I wanted and needed back when I was in 21, 22, because I struggled really badly with anxiety and depression. I live a very happy, content life now, and it's, you know, I can see the joy and colour in things again, and it's lovely. But back then, I feel like I didn't have the appropriate help that I needed, particularly with explaining what was happening to me. So my anxiety started when I experienced a symptom called dissociation, DPDR, derealization, depersonalization. It's when you feel like you're not quite here, you don't feel like you're in the room, like you feel like you're looking in a mirror, but you can't quite, it doesn't feel like you're there. Sometimes you can hear your own voice. It just feels like you're detached from everything. And that happened one morning, randomly at work. And I thought I'd broken my brain. And, you know, I thought, it felt like I was in the Matrix or something.
Really?
Yeah, and
so a blue pill, red pill situation.
Yeah, exactly. And I went to the doctor. I was like, hey, doc, I feel like I'm not here. I'm in the Matrix. I'm dissociating. And he's just there, like, with his eyes like, oh, yeah, that sounds odd. And immediately just put me on sertraline and a year waiting list for CBT. And in that time, I was getting more and more scared, going more and more inwards, developing more and more symptoms like heart palpitations, focusing on my breath, couldn't get a full breath, couldn't sleep, couldn't eat. And I was like, this isn't right. I don't know what's going on here. And what I aim to do is to be that person who does struggle with really intense anxiety, to be like, hey, you're all right. And what really helped me was someone about a year into this coming out and saying, oh yeah, that's called derealization. You must be stressed and anxious recently. Oh, this is why this is happening. And they kind of introduced me to this. And that's when I started to get better. I was like, what, so this is like common and normal? They're like, yeah, you're not going crazy. And I just started to learn about it more. And I used to be a teacher, a primary school teacher, and I thought, well, I love education, and now I'm into psychology, so I studied to be a therapist in a master's and postgrad as well. And I thought, let's combine this both and be that person to help other people that are in that situation. And that's what I've done with my social media and done with my book. I just want people to see it and go, ah, feel seen. I hear that a lot. You made me feel seen. I think that's one of the nicest compliments I've heard.
Yeah. I completely understand what they mean when they say that, because it's an awful thing, as I said, almost I think one of the cruelest things. You just feel so alone. You feel so isolated. You feel like you're walking in the shadows yourself. And that is that's a very difficult feeling to deal with. And it's very hard to vocalise and very hard to talk about, I think. And certainly when I've had my most difficult times, it's just incredibly isolating. I think that's the cruelest part of it, is the cold isolation, I think, of it all. So it's incredible. But, I mean, you know, in terms of the education point, that's why, you know, the work I've been doing with the early support hubs and trying to get, you know, mental health support teams in all the schools, but also having these hubs where people can kind of walk in and be heard early and receive good advice and teaching about it. You know, if you learn these things as you grow up, it's so much easier, isn't it? Because that's one of the challenges, I guess, as an adult, is that if you've learned a certain way of living and thinking and you've had a certain understanding of life, it is more challenging to unlearn. I don't think, you know, obviously we can, and I've unlearned and relearned different ways of thinking and being, but it is more of a challenge. And that's why I focus so much on the school age, because I think if we can get into that age,
yes,
we can prevent quite a bit, can't we?
Yeah, it should be in the curriculum and things like that. I had to do compulsory French at school. I don't know about you. I had to do compulsory French for 5 years. I was like, can I just do history? They're like, no, do French.
Well, I think there is plenty. The good news is, I think there are plenty of people, and there's plenty of work going on to try and increase the amount that we have in the curriculum. And, you know, when I visit schools and stuff, it's obvious to me that teachers really want it there, but it's not really about the teachers, not in a negative sense at all, but it's about, you know, you've got to give the funding to the schools, the space in the curriculum, extra teaching time, the resources and the power to do it. We can't just tell teachers, hey, you've got to teach this now. You've also got to train teachers or bring in third parties, kind of how like the mental health support teams, I guess, are adding in to the structures and stuff. You have to have the ability to provide that. You can't just tell people, otherwise all you're going to do is actually pass on a hell of a lot of anxiety to your teachers, right? And that doesn't help anyone, does it?
Oh, yeah. So. And there's a lot of anxiety in the education profession.
Well, there is. And I wonder, I was just going to finish on this part on that, because I know we've got a lot of teachers and things that listen to the Stompcast. And shout out to you all, because I was at a school the other day for World Mental Health Day, and it was amazing, actually. I was chuffed. We actually managed to do a webinar where I was teaching about mental fitness for an hour. Managed to get it out to 26,000 students.
Oh, wow.
So across the country, and we did that from a school just by Rotherhithe, where I actually used to live, which was pretty cool. So shout out to all the teachers. But I wonder if you could just touch upon the point of, what is it like being a teacher? And obviously you came from that profession and you're working in psychotherapy now. What is it like being a teacher in this kind of modern day and age, and the challenges with things like social media and the clear rise rates of things like anxiety that they're seeing? Like, what is the challenges, and how can we actually support teachers a bit better too?
Oh, teachers have my utmost respect. They work a lot more hours than what they're paid for, even contracted for. And it's not only is that, but it's the challenges as well, the modern challenges of things. Providing education about anything, never mind mental health, but providing education about anything in a world where children can just access any information from anyone must be really, really challenging. Not only that, but the stresses, balancing that and their personal lives, the stresses from things like Ofsted, meeting standards, just things like that. I just think teachers are excellent, and I honestly couldn't do it by the end of it. I was too stressed and tired, and I was like, wow. I was a trainee teacher at the time. I used to work in a pupil referral unit, and that was nice because I had a class of 8, and it has its challenges, but I absolutely loved that job.
I can imagine that you'd have enjoyed that, yeah.
Yeah, but I was head of behaviour there, so it was like, I don't have to go home and mark 60 books a day or whatever it is, because I could just go home and, right, I'm done now. Teachers have got a lot, and they've got to be particularly mindful of being nice and care for themselves. Wow, this is
bad, by the way.
This is great. This is great.
I love how you're trying to.
Sorry, teachers, if you're like this is a
let's
this
go
is
and try and stand
half bothered
this
answer here. It's like it's not. I'm but just
we
I'm
are
trying
actually
not to
being
die.
Like yeah. This is perhaps up there with the most rain we've had in like a downpour. Should we try and stand under this thing for a bit? It looks maybe.
What are they called again?
pagoda. Is it pagoda? Is that the word? It's just chaos, man. Honestly, but not to try and draw similarities, but we're a hardy group here on the Stumpcast, aren't we, really? You know, we don't have like a lovely, cushy... I mean, think about this, Charlie. When you're doing your other podcasts, are they out in the rain?
Nope.
Do they have the lovely heating on or
It must be the Manchester thing.
They do. They have lovely conditions, but he says as he's running over to
welcome
hide
to the swim cast.
Effectively a big umbrella. We should have come here straight away. Oh, can you hear that, everyone listening? It's all of a sudden, there's no rain. Oh, my God.
Oh. Hey, we could make this arty, like some kind of Wes Anderson conversation.
My goodness me. Yeah. We're staying under here for a reasonable period of time. Would you judge us, guys, on the Stompcast, listeners, if we stay here in the dry, would you judge us? Would you allow us? I mean, our legs are soaking. Charlie's gained at least a stone and a half in weight in rain. The coat is puffed up, a hat. Anyway, oh, Em's, you coming in? Come under the come out. Em's, come out of it as well. Everyone, get out of the thing. Let's finish off with our positive note to teachers. I mean, yeah, as you said, really, I think it is a challenging job, but we do actually have to acknowledge as well. I think they do a great job, but we actually need to make it a more realistic profession to have like longevity as a career in. Because one of the challenges I keep hearing is that a lot of well, almost like you're talking about, I don't know why you're less of a profession, but lots of people doing the teacher training, doing a couple of years, then leaving. And of course, we need to work on why that is the case. We don't want that to be the case, do we?
So no.
It's providing the support that they need. And I think that's something that, as a country, I think we have to kind of look at.
Yeah, no, definitely. And from my end, I see a lot of teachers that come in. I do a lot of like mental health talks about anxiety and burnout. And teachers are like way up there as
well.
Yeah, just the workload and things and trying to balance that in your personal life.
And do they talk about children's mental health when they come in? As a worry, as a pressure? Is that part of the pressure now?
Yeah, they talk about children's mental health. Some teachers talk about their own children's mental health, balancing their personal lives and their work, how holidays are like four times dearer for them as well.
That's actually so true, isn't
it? Yeah, but that place...
I accidentally flew in half term the other week and... yeah, it's just like, it just doubles the price, right? It's just, you think teachers have to deal with that
least,
all the time.
They well earned holiday,
And they deserve their holidays, and then all of a sudden there's a tariff on top of it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they do deserve a break and stuff. And
what would you say to them, to any teacher that's listening, thinking, gosh, it sounds a bit like me, I'm a bit burnt out with things. What practical advice can you give? I know you're not... it's a general advice, but is there anything you can say, kind of words of comfort or advice you can share to them from your experience and the people that you've seen?
Yeah, like we said earlier, like shift down the gears and give yourself permission to stop. Even if there's things that you have to do, you're the most important here. Like you functioning is the most important. Don't feel guilty for putting yourself first, for doing something selfish. I advocate being selfish a lot. You know, it's a word that's often thrown around as an insult, but if you look at it, its very definition, it's like, no, be selfish for a bit. You know, all your work is for others, to teach others. Maybe you've got families at home and you've got to do things for others. Really, like, sit down and be like, what's here for you? What's in your week for you here? And that's okay. It could be something small, hot bath, trash show on TV, or whatever. It's just seeing a friend. Don't feel guilty for doing that. And, I always like time boundaries as well. When it hits a certain time of day or evening or whatever, shut the laptop and just have you time, because you need it, your nervous system needs it. And give yourself a pat on the back as well. It's not an easy profession.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Great advice. And it just, I don't know why, it just brings up a quote I saw actually just yesterday. And it was, it's like a question quote. And it says, if I asked you who you love in your life, how long would it take before you named yourself? You know, if you think of all your loved ones, you know, how long would it go if you go, actually, I love myself?
Yeah, it's a very British thing as well, isn't it? Yeah, but like, you're allowed to, you should.
Yeah, you should be naming yourself, like, I love who I am, I love myself. It's an important thing. If you can't love yourself, how can anyone else love you in the way that you deserve?
Yeah.
True, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Anyway, we'll come to the end of part one. We are wet, but we are grounded and we're positive about it, right? You know, we're appreciative of nature and its rain. We wouldn't mind a bit of sunshine. Charlie, what do you think? Anywhere you'd rather be right now?
A beach.
A beach, she says. A beach, said. I think that's fair enough. Guys, we'll see you soon. I hope you enjoyed this part. And we're going to talk in part two about what anxiety actually is, because it's really useful. People talk about anxiety all the time. But what is anxiety? What actually is this thing that we talk about? We'll see you in part two very soon.
If you're looking for more mental fitness content, check out my book, The Mind Manual, Mental Fitness Tools for Everyone, and A Better Day and A Better Day Journal for Children. And if you have a man in your life, or indeed if you're a man listening to this, make sure you check out Mettle, the app, M-E-T-T-L-E, mental fitness tools that are designed for men. Download now.